Visioneers, Episode 16, Designing for Rebirth.
Part 5, The Congress of the Global Mind. So now we come to the part of the story for which everything preceding has been preparation. Des, this idea was launched very early in the book and picked up again by Mark in his speech to the United Nations. Was it clear to you from the beginning that this was where the story would go?
Well, the need to go there was clear, but how to do it was by no means evident. It had to come out of all of the experience of love and courage and struggling against evil that we've seen so far. But it also had to gather a spiritual significance around it. And that's what the characters have been doing. Now we're ready to see how they pull this off and involve the whole world in the process.
Well, where do we start? What happens next?
Well, first of all, there's a transition between what has happened and where we're going. You'll remember that Carlos Palmyra was the perpetrator of the ghastly plan to kill Mark and Esther at their wedding.
Yeah, how could I forget?
And the last time we saw Palmyra, he was moving to get out of Switzerland and head for Colombia. Well, along the way, Providence steps in a very unusual way.
Yes, I remember. He's riding in his limousine and suddenly a figure appears beside him. He can see it, but his chauffeur can't.
Yes, it's a powerful, and for Palmyra, a climactic exchange. We'll read it for you.
Palmyra says nothing more to his chauffeur. He slides the glass panel closed and leaves the interior light on. He looks deep into the dark brown eyes of the man sitting beside him.
All right. What's going on? I see you recognize me, though we haven't met before. My name is Baba Satyananda. You were there on the television screen in Jerusalem, but they said you weren't there in person. Now you're here. I can see you and hear you, but my driver can't. What the hell is this about?
Hell? Devil? Your images reveal your mind, Senor. I come in quite different guise than that.
Then tell me, why have you come?
Palmyra's voice is steady, but around his heart he feels an icy hand of terror. Baba replies.
Good. You've come to the point quite quickly. Your mind is rational and paying attention. Your time is short. You'll need all your faculties to hear well before you go.
In no uncertain words, Baba lets Palmyra know that his sway over his evil empire has run its course. His final words are chilling to the terrified El Condor.
The Visioneers are enlightening the minds of people everywhere to know they have the power within themselves when they search for their inner light, when they work together to build shared visions of the future, when they embrace the laws of life and love, then they have the power to transform the planet, and they will. Against this force, you and your like are as dust in the wind. You may obscure the vision for a time, but in the end, you're swept away. For you, that time has already come. For your compatriots, it will follow swiftly. Know this and take it to your grave. May your soul, with its burden, find a path.
That sounds final. Palmyra's chauffeur notices his employer slumped in the back seat of the limousine. He rushes him to the emergency in the closest hospital. The final exchange between the chauffeur and the doctor tells the story.
This man was your employer? Asks the doctor. Yes. That's Mr. Carlos Palmyra. He's very important. Yes, but now he's dead. A massive heart attack, I expect. The post-mortem will tell us more. He would have had no warning. He literally blew up inside. Please come with me and we'll begin the details.
So Palmyra has received his retribution. Is there more symbolism for the world here?
Well, it's not a new message or theme, but I think it has particular significance in these dark days for the world's future.
We are looking for light over darkness to prevail.
Yes, exactly.
Well, what happens next?
We go to the other piece of unfinished business from the wedding, the fate of Camel Rashid.
Yes, the last time we saw him, he was badly injured from a knife wound.
Well, now it's the day after the wedding. Mark and Esther are ready to go on their honeymoon. They hear from Muhammad about the death of Palmyra, and they go to see Camel in hospital. He's still unconscious. And it's Esther who takes the lead in showing the significance of Camel to herself and Mark and the work of the visioneers. She speaks softly to the unconscious figure.
Camel, this is Esther. Mark is here too. Both of us have come to thank you for saving our lives. Now you must save your own. If you can hear me, Camel, please know that we understand what you did. We'll make sure the world understands it too. We put our trust in God, Camel, and he worked through you to keep us safe. There is a plan unfolding now. None of us sees it clearly. But you were meant to play this role to save our lives and turn away the force of evil. Great good will come of that, and you'll live to see it, Camel, if you fight as hard for your own life as you fought in the past when you were driven by anger. The world has a great chance now to move to a new age of peace and understanding. You've played your part well to make that happen. You can rest now, Camel, but you can't die. You must get your strength back to be a leader for your people. You have taken the right path and you must live to show others the way.
Well, now we get a big change in setting and spirit.
Yes, Mark and Esther are off on their honeymoon to Australia. They begin their holiday at the center of the continent. Both of them feel the land speaking to them, but they can't quite get the message. They fly over Ayers Rock.
Below them, jutting up out of the empty Spinifex plain, the great red monolith stands beckoning. Later, on the ground, touching its searing red precipices, clambering over it 300 meters above the dusty red earth below, exploring its caves and outcrops, they feel drawn and held by this great red magnet at the center of time and space.
What is it, Mark? What is it about this land?
Esther asks as they stroll hand in hand in the cool evening air. Above them, the mass of Ayers Rock changes color in the fading light as the sun sets far away in the west behind the primordial humps of rocks called the Olgas, cataclysms of another age and perhaps portents of one to come. I don't know, Esther, says Mark, but there's more to this than the fascinating landmarks. We were meant to come here together. Both of us can feel it. I've lived my whole life in Australia, but never came here before. It's been waiting for us, both of us together. Now we have to listen and to discover what it means. But they don't get any answers. And they sweep on now to Sydney.
And oh, here we get the magnificent reception on the harbor. I just have to read some of this. The great spectacle is the boats. Oh, the boats. All day yesterday and this morning, the radio stations were giving out word that Mark and Esther would be on the harbor, and everyone was invited to come out and greet them. And they do. Hundreds and hundreds of small craft, private yachts, motor launches, speedboats, tiny sailing skiffs. Everyone is out, forming a haphazard, multicolored, totally disorganized flotilla, out to greet their celebrities, Sydney style, on the harbor. And the Lord Mayor's launch, filled with its official guests, appears, and the chaos on the water somehow magically turns to order. Mark puts on the admiral's uniform with the three-cornered hat, and Esther stands beside him on the deck in a shining white dress, her curly auburn hair billowing in the breeze. And as their launch comes into mid-harbor, the flotilla opens up to create a passage 100 meters wide with water police patrolling on either side. Even the busy ferry traffic is interrupted, and many of the squat green and black craft are pressed into service, bringing crowds from the shore out to join the fun. Well then, Mark and Esther appear on deck. There's a cacophony of horns and whistles and hoots and cheers. Halfway down the first run to the bridge, Mark takes off his admiral hat and gives it to Esther, much to the roaring approval of every noise device on the water. What a triumphal passage. If Sydney couldn't play host for these two at the wedding, it's certainly not going to miss the opportunity at the honeymoon. While Esther and Mark are still on the deck, each waving a Visioneer flag furiously above their head, with Esther still wearing the admiral's hat. Suddenly, the song of the Visioneers booms out across the water from loudspeakers set out at the Opera House, and a dozen boats fitted with water cannon fire great volleys of spray into the air as a finale. A tremendous cheer, three cheers for Mark and Esther, rips across the harbor from shore to shore.
And then, after Sydney, it's Brisbane's turn to welcome Mark as a returning favorite son with his lovely bride, both of them now prominent players on the world scene. There's a reception 2 days later for them at the Exhibition Grounds in Brisbane, and a particularly touching scene when thousands of children sing new words to Australia's favorite ballad, Waltzing Matilda.
Once a jolly venturer came down to Jerusalem, seeking to show that the world could be free. And he sang as he came and traveled in that holy land, "You'll come a-visioning, my darling, with me. Visioning, my darling, visioning, my darling, you'll come a-visioning, my darling, with me." And he sang as he came and traveled in that holy land, "You'll come a-visioning, my darling, with me."
And the song continues, building toward a final climactic chorus.
Now there's a brilliant light shining in Jerusalem, blazing so bright that the whole world can see. And we call for all nations to make the world a holy land. You'll come a-visioning, my darling, with me. Visioning, my darling, visioning, my darling, you'll come a-visioning, my darling, with me. And we call for all nations to make the world a holy land. You'll come a-visioning, my darling, with me.
Choked with emotion, Mark speaks to them.
Yes, we will. We will make the world a holy land. Oh, it's a wonderful message. There's a spirit set free now that's sweeping the whole world. Boys and girls, men and women in every land are filled with it. It's good, it's strong, and it's true. God bless you all for coming out today. Wherever we go from here into the world, Esther and I can never forget this scene here today and your song. Keep singing, boys and girls. Keep singing loud and strong until the leaders of all the nations do indeed make this world a holy land.
Whew. Now, Mark and Esther revisit Mark's old home on the farm where he grew up. This is a tender and emotional time for them. It provides the space to find the next significant piece in their adventure. There is a touching love scene as they come down from the ridge overlooking the homestead under the bright, star-filled sky.
And as they lie together later in the night, Mark notices that Esther is dreaming. Her head tosses from side to side. She moans softly. More restlessness. He feels her body stiffen and then arch slightly, tensing up like a spring. Her head tosses more quickly. Then with a cry, she snaps awake, her eyes wide open, staring at him in the pale light of the coming dawn.
Oh, Mark! Mark, I saw it!
So what, darling? You were dreaming.
Yes. Yes, but I saw it. Quickly, Mark. I want to tell you before it goes.
She sits up.
Go on. We have to get up. I need a pencil and a paper. I have to show you. It's so clear. Come on. Help me. Help me, darling.
She's already out of bed, gathering her robe around her. Mark follows. She leads them to the kitchen. Still partially in her dream, she fumbles unsuccessfully for something to write on. Mark is smiling at her. He sits her at a table and produces a pad and pencil. There. Now, what do you want to show me?
Esther describes how in her dream she saw herself traveling around the world, touching various energy centers. She began at Ayers Rock, and she sketches all this.
And Mark sits staring at the set of circles and lines that Esther has drawn. At first, it looks like a jumble. Six circles, each one with five, four, or three lines radiating out from it, some connected, some not going anywhere. Four of the circles are named: Ayers Rock, Jerusalem, Beijing, and Machu Picchu. The other two appear to be in high mountains, one possibly in North America, and the other somewhere in Africa. Mark takes the pencil from Esther and begins to draw connecting lines. I think, my darling, that you've definitely been given a message of some kind. I'm not sure what yet, but look, if you start to join these lines just as you've drawn them, but imagine this flat sheet of paper as a round globe, so that you've got the lines going around the back of the papers, so to speak, then I think what you've got is a way of dividing the world up into a number of segments, with each of these circles being a focal point.
Yes, I see what you mean. I can't quite visualize it still, and I don't understand what it's all about.
Well, neither do I, but my hunch is that it's got something to do with the Congress of the Global Mind. We still haven't decided on the world's centers for that, and the way they're going to be linked together. I think you may have given it to us here in this one brilliant piece of intuition.
But, Mark, do you know what more it means? I didn't just make this up. Some of these places I've never seen. Perhaps going to Ayers Rock triggered something off. We both felt the energy there. But more important than that, what it means is that we've been guided now by some higher power to do this work. Do you remember what I said to you on the first morning after our wedding in Jerusalem? I said God was keeping us safe and that there's a plan. And remember those celebrations in Sydney and Brisbane and people kept coming out in the thousands to see us? It's all part of a great awakening. Oh, Mark, it's so exciting.
Yes, Esther. And do you know, I think it really began when we were here last time. I knew then, though I hadn't asked you, that I was going to marry you. I knew there was a part missing in me, and that I could never do what was being asked of me without that piece being filled in. Well, you're there now, my darling. We've passed all the tests for togetherness, and some of them were pretty rough. But we're there now. We've got this wonderful partnership, and we've seen the first real sign of it this morning.
Mark gets to his feet.
And now, let's look for another sign. See out there? It's the sun coming up through the trees. And I just bet if we go out onto the veranda, we'll get some old kookaburra to laugh. And he won't be laughing at us. As sure as the sun's rising, he'll be laughing with us for a new day and a new life and a new world. What do you say we go out and give it a try?
Arms around each other, they walk out onto the veranda in the early morning sunlight. Immediately from a tall gum tree in the next paddock, the caw-caw crackling laugh of a kookaburra breaks out. A few seconds later, it's picked up by another on the other side of the house, and then another, until the whole bush is filled with their laughing. And on the veranda of the old homestead, two lovers, arms around each other, tassel-headed and sleepy-eyed, throw their heads back and join in the chorus for a new day and their new life of meaning together. So it looks like there's a start of a whole new adventure for Mark and Esther. What happens next here?
Well now, after a long absence, the mentors come back.
So let's get back to the story. What do the mentors think of the way things are moving?
Oh, they're very pleased. Churchill, as usual, is eager to get on with it. He delivers another one of his stirring speeches. The dawn is breaking on the long day of our final triumph. Our heroes and heroines stand ready for the test. Across every continent, the lines of communication will be erected. Into every village, every city, every household, the word must go out that this will be the world's greatest challenge, with riches for the taking far nobler than any spoils of war. For we are set to create on earth the empires of the mind, enlightened, ennobled, and empowered against the cowering forces of darkness, which conquer we must and conquer we shall.
Oh, that's very stirring, but it has a warlike sound to it. Anne is there. She leans forward in her chair, eyes wide open and appealing. I'm sure you've all had very much experience in fighting wars and mounting campaigns, but I just want to say I think this is different. In fact, we have to make it different, because if it isn't, then we'll just get the same results as before, some winning, some losing, and nothing settled. You've said it so well, Mr. Churchill. It's the world's greatest challenge. We're building new empires of the mind, but it's not the old mind of conquest and control. No, it's the new mind of life and love. That's what Mark Venture said to the United Nations. That's what Louis Valdez told the world in his broadcast before he was killed. And the world has learned from that. You've seen them come out in thousands to his memorial service. You saw the reception for Mark and Esther at their wedding in Jerusalem, and the whole world was watching that. You talk about public relations, Mr. President. Mark and Esther's wedding was the greatest public relations event in history.
Well, everyone is very excited now to get on with the action. Again, Churchill drops one of his direction-changing ideas. He says that the mentors must now meet with Mark and Esther and become a new operational team.
Ah, there's another message for the world. At times of crisis, chosen men and women work with higher powers to produce breakthrough. What happens?
Well, everyone comes together in the visioneering room, and there's a touching scene as you, the listener participant, introduce the two groups to each other. And then it's Esther's turn to carry on.
Yes, and Esther begins to carry the action by sharing the ideas that came to her in her dream. The mentors immediately contribute their ideas, and the new team is quickly underway. Let's read this piece. Why then, Esther says, it was like this. I saw a number of centers where the Earth's energy was really strong. I don't know why, but I could feel it. Four of them were places I recognized. There was Ayers Rock in the center of Australia, Jerusalem, my home, Beijing, more specifically Tiananmen Square, and Machu Picchu, the lost city of the Incas in Peru.
As Esther speaks, each of these places lights up on the globe. She looks amazed, and the others smile.
Why? That's marvelous. Are you doing that?
You might say so.
Well, perhaps you could help me with the other two. I'm not sure where they are. The first is a valley in high mountains somewhere in North America.
That'll be Colorado, says President Kennedy, as quick as a flash. How do you know that? Asks Charles Dickens. I've read Atlas Shrugged. You know, Ayn Rand's book about how the world's most creative and productive people gathered in this valley in Colorado to protect their genius from the despoilers. Besides, I've been there.
Say, Esther, was it a long green valley between two mountain ranges with a feeling of high energy all around?
Why, yes, that's exactly how it was.
Crestone, Colorado. Put it on the globe. You do so. Esther looks nonplussed, but continues.
The other place was also in the mountains, and I'm fairly sure it was Africa. A big square-topped mountain as wide as all the world and covered with snow.
Kilimanjaro, says Churchill.
Aha, Winston, chuckles Kennedy. So you've read Ernest Hemingway?
Yes, and I also know Africa. That's Kilimanjaro to a T. Put it on the globe.
Well, I'm glad you chaps read such good novelists, Charles Dickens exclaims from the sidelines. I'm really impressed.
And now a pattern emerges which Churchill quickly recognizes.
Can you see, all of you, how Jerusalem is at the strategic center of the whole thing, with links out to every segment and every other center? And it's also at the heart of the great areas of population in Asia, Europe, and Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe we're looking at the site for the World Assembly. Jerusalem is destined to be the world's universal city, the centerpiece of the new millennium.
Why, Mark, that's exactly what the Reverend Ringthorpe said at our wedding. And who could ever forget Teresa singing about the new Jerusalem? And here it is again, right out of my vision. All of us seeing it and focusing our thinking on it so we can understand it better. It's true. I'm sure it's true. Jerusalem will be the new center and symbol for peace and love in the world.
And now Charles Dickens steps in, and as he has done before, he gives some order to the whole thing, and he comes up with a rather ingenious description. Jerry, do you want to tell the listener about this?
Yes. Well, imagine a flat map with Jerusalem at the center. And now you're going to travel west to five other centers called globecoms. First, you travel west to Crestone, Colorado in North America. From there, you go south to South America, to Peru, and to Machu Picchu. From Machu Picchu, you go east across the Atlantic to Africa, to Kilimanjaro. And then you continue east across the Indian Ocean to Australia, to the central Ayers Rock. From there, you go north to China, and particularly to Beijing and Tiananmen Square. And from there, west again, back to Jerusalem. And you've made the full circle. So these are the globecoms. Now the world is divided into trisets emanating from these globecoms. And I'll just tell you the names of these new trisets. Namrasia, Centrasia, Afralia, Samafrica, Atlantica, North Pacifica, South Pacifica, and the Surset of Antarctica. And in your package, you will find the flat map, should you care to refer to it at some other time.
Yes, so we've got two new words invented here by, well, a whole lot of new words, actually, but the two new words that are going to crop up quite a bit are globecoms, which are the command centers, and they are as named, and now these trisets with their various names, and there are seven of them altogether, and Antarctica at the bottom. Now, into this, Esther puts another brilliant piece of intuition.
It will be a creation. Our Congress will not be a meeting, not just an exchange of ideas. It will be an act of creation. It's based on the story of Genesis in the Bible that will become not a religious piece, but a metaphor for our time. It gives us a way for every living being on the earth to experience a new creation. Our Congress will last 7 days. Just as the scriptures tell of God creating the world in 6 days and resting in celebration on the seventh, so all our Congress will recreate in 6 days what the world needs for its rebirth into a golden age, and on the seventh day we'll rest and be thankful. And then we'll celebrate. Oh, how we celebrate. So it began in darkness, and on the first day, God said, let there be light. That will be our first theme. The opening day of the Congress will be a glorious festival of light, dispelling the darkness of negativity and destruction. And on the second day, God created heaven, and that will be our second theme, a day of contemplation, searching in our hearts for the meaning of a higher purpose that includes all people as one. And on the third day, God created the dry land out of the waters of the deep and called the dry land earth. And our third day will be Earth Day. And on the fourth day, God created the sun, the moon, and the stars. And this will be our day of the universe. And on the fifth, he created the creatures of the sea and the air. And this will be our day of oceans and sky. And on the sixth, God began by creating the creatures of the earth. And this, our sixth day of Congress, will be our day of birth. And on the seventh day, God ended his work and he rested and blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. And so too on the seventh day of our Congress, we'll rest from our search for wisdom and understanding and take pride in all that we've accomplished.
Now it's Dickens who catches the solemnity of it all and speaks for everyone at the end. My friends, we came together here to plan the final act of the great drama that we're giving to the world. But not in my wildest anticipation, nor in the loftiest soaring of my most eager imaginings, could I have foreseen the shining sublimity of what has just been placed before us. Yes, my dear Esther, I can see your vision. So I'm sure can all of us here, we men so well accustomed to battling in hard reality. You've given us a glimpse of God again moving in his earthly garden. May we now say yes to such a dream, and yes to its inscription in the minds of all on earth, and yes to the commitment and the labor to make it so.